Welcome everybody to the Saturday speaker meeting of the Highlands and Islands Groups of NA. And can we please have a moment's silence to remember to still suffer an addict in and out of these rooms. Thank you, folks. I say we are a speaker meeting, but we're going to start the meeting in the usual way. So we have some meeting reminders, which is please remember to listen to the similarities and not the differences. Please be mindful. What is needed to share if the meeting is large in order to find our maximum people share, we ask that we share the time. Or as we say, this is a main speaker meeting. Please remember to mute your microphones when not sharing. Please be mindful that it is a conscience of this group not to use video. We thank you for respecting those things, and we can look after them for you if you can't look after them for yourselves. If used today or on a maintenance program, please listen to what is being said and talk to someone after the meeting. And the meeting after the meeting will take place. We're happy for attendees to post in the text box, so please refrain from cross-sharing and chit-chatting, and please keep the messages positive, keep an atmosphere of recovery. And if you wouldn't do it in a face-to-face meeting, please don't do it here. If you need to talk to any of the trusted servants in the meeting, you can do it by direct message if you've got a problem that you'd want to be help solving. If you're new to our meetings, welcome. We're really glad that you're here. You might like to check out our guidelines page. The link is there. It tells you a little bit about our groups. It is possible to call into these meetings via mobiles and landlines from over 40 countries around the world. You can go to the link that's in that little section of the reading. Follow the trailer breadcrumbs, it will show you how to go about doing that. Worth making a note in case your internet is down. I did it the other day. If you have any questions about our meetings or anything else to do with recovery in NA, please send an email to meetings@hignett.org.uk and we'll endeavour to answer your questions as best we can. And I've left a bit out. You can also use that email to request items of digital literature in NA literature in digital format if you can't get it any other way. So thank you, guys. And we are going to start this meeting in the usual way with some suggested readings from the basic text. So I'm going to ask people if they'd be kind enough to help by reading them. So could I please ask someone to tell us who is an addict?
My name's Jim. I'm an addict.
Hello, Jim.
Hello, Jim.
Who is an addict? Most of us do not have to think twice about this question. We know. A whole life and thinking with certain drugs in one form or another, getting and using and finding ways and means to get more. We live to use and use to live. Very simply, an addict is a man or woman whose life is controlled by drugs. We are people in the grip of a continuing and progressive illness whose ends are always the same, jails, institutions and death. Thank you so much. Thanks.
Thank you, Jim. And would someone be kind enough to read what is the Narcotics Anonymous program for us?
I'm an addict named Ellie.
Hi, Ellie.
Hi, Ellie. What is the Narcotics Anonymous program? NA is a nonprofit fellowship or society of men and women for whom drugs have become a major problem. We are recovering addicts who meet regularly to help each other stay clean. This is a program of complete abstinence from all drugs. There is only one requirement for membership, the desire to stop using. We suggest that you keep an open mind and give yourself a break. Our program is a set of principles written so simply that we can follow them in our daily lives. The most important thing about them is that they work. There are no strings attached to NA. We are not affiliated with any other organizations. We have no initiation fees or dues, no pledges to sign, no promises to make to anyone. We are not connected with any political, religious, or law enforcement groups and are under no surveillance at any time. Anyone may join us, regardless of age, race, sexual identity, creed, religion, or lack of religion. We are not interested in what or how much you used or who your connections were, what you have done in the past, how much or how little you have, but only in what you want to do about your problem and how we can help. The newcomer is the most important person at any meeting because we can only keep what we have by giving it away. We have learned from our group experience that those who keep coming to our meetings regularly stay clean. Thanks for letting me read.
Thank you, Ellie.
Thank you, Ellie.
And would someone like to answer the $64,000 question by telling us why we're here?
My name is Selena. I'm an addict. Why are we here?
Hi, Selena.
Before coming to the Fellowship of NA, we could not manage our own lives. We could not live and enjoy life as other people do. We had to have something different, and we thought we'd found it in drugs. We placed their use ahead of the welfare of our families, our wives, husbands, and our children. We had to have drugs at all costs. We did many people great harm, but most of all, we harmed ourselves. Through our inability to accept personal responsibilities, we were actually creating our own problems. We seemed to be incapable of facing life on its own terms. Most of us realized that in our addiction, we were slowly committing suicide. But addiction is such a cunning enemy of life that we'd lost the power to do anything about it. Many of us ended up in jail or sought help through medicine, religion, and psychiatry. None of these methods was sufficient for us. Our disease always resurfaced or continued to progress until, in desperation, we sought help from each other in Narcotics Anonymous. After coming to NA, we realized we were sick people. We suffered from a disease from which there is no known cure. It can, however, be arrested at some point, and recovery is then possible. Thanks for allowing me to read.
Thank you, Selena.
And then could someone please tell us how it works?
I'm Christine, I'm an addict.
Hi, Christine.
Hi, Christine.
How it works, if you want what we have to offer and are willing to make the effort to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. These are the principles that made our recovery possible. One, we admitted that we were powerless over our addiction, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, we made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, we made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, we admitted to God, to ourselves and to another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, we humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, we made a list of all persons we'd harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, we made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, we continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, we sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to addicts and to practice these principles in all our affairs. This sounds like a big order, and we can't do it all at once. We didn't become addicted in one day, so remember, easy does it. There is one thing more than anything else that would defeat us in our recovery. This is an attitude of indifference or intolerance towards spiritual principles. Three of these that are indispensable are honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. With these, we are well on our way. We feel that our approach to the disease of addiction is completely realistic, for the therapeutic value of one addict helping another is without parallel. We believe that the sooner we face our problems within our society, in everyday living, just that much faster do we become acceptable, responsible, and productive members of that society. The only way to keep from returning to active addiction is not to take that first drug. If you're like us, you know that one is too many and a thousand never enough. We put great emphasis on this, for we know that when we use drugs in any form or substitute one for another, we release our addiction all over again. Thinking of alcohol as different from other drugs has caused a great many addicts to relapse. Before we came to NA, many of us viewed alcohol separately, but we cannot afford to be confused about this. Alcohol is a drug. We are people with the disease of addiction who must abstain from all drugs in order to recover.
Thank you, Christine.
Thank you, Christine.
And thank you again to everybody that's read, that's helped us open the meeting. And take this opportunity to welcome those that have joined us since we first started. A huge welcome to any visitors to our meeting tonight, and a massive welcome to any newcomers that might be with us this evening. We hope you're going to hear something that's going to encourage you to keep coming back. And we do have a speaker tonight, and I'm going to hand you over to Jay, who's going to introduce them. So, Jay, over to you, my friend.
Thank you, Steve.
Thanks, Steve.
I'm an addict. My name is Jay.
Hello, Jay.
Hi, Jay.
Hello, Jay.
The individual that's sharing tonight showed up on our doorsteps a little over a year ago. And she's become an integral part of this family, this group, and this platform. And I've watched her grow leaps and bounds from the individual that walked into these rooms. I've watched her take on projects and service, and it's been amazing to see her blossom in this time that she's been with us. And I will let her tell you her journey, because it is her journey. And I appreciate the fact that I've been able to watch that happen and unfold. So without further ado, Lisa, would you share with us?
Thank you, Jay.
Thank you, Jay. Hi, everyone. My name is Lisa. I'm an addict.
Hi, Lisa.
Lisa.
Hello. I'm like close to tears now, Jay. That was really nice. Thank you so much for that introduction. I was trying to keep my composure, but that's got the emotion flowing. Honestly, like, I'm shocked that I am here right now and that I'm doing the main share of this meeting. I've been coming to this meeting every single Saturday since I found NA this last year. And I've heard the most amazing shares, and I just didn't ever think I would be doing like a main share. I don't know. Just, I actually had to check with Steve and Jay on Monday, because I thought it was a joke, but apparently it wasn't. So here I am. Although I must admit, I'm kind of half expecting like a bucket of pig's blood to like drop on my head, you know, like it's all been a joke. No, I'm really grateful to have been asked to do this and be able to share a bit about myself and my journey with you guys. It really is such an honour just to be asked. I'm always really shocked when I'm asked to share, and it's really lovely. So I guess I will just start at the beginning. I am from Shetland. I've always lived in Shetland, except for like 5 years when I was at university in Aberdeen. And yeah, it's quite a normal place for me to live. Like, if, in my mind, it's a normal place to live. But it is very far away. I'm, you know, approximately 260 miles away from the mainland. That's from Aberdeen. That's to get to Aberdeen. But I've always lived here, so it doesn't seem that strange to me. I have two amazing parents that I love so much, and a sister that I love so much, and it's difficult for me to really talk about, because I love my parents to bits, but there was a lot of mistakes that were made and a lot of things that happened in my childhood that were not great. You know, I had a lovely family home and I lived in a lovely area. So I've always felt guilty for the way that I feel, because I feel like I should be grateful because I have all this. But, you know, as soon as I was born, pretty much my family's kind of life kind of just got really toxic and dark. And I always feel like I've been anxious since birth, but maybe it was just that I was born into this situation that was quite tumultuous. You know, there was my dad had a lot of problems with substance abuse, and we'd leave a lot, you know, and my mum was having to work all the time because we were having like bailiffs knocking at our door, and my dad was in tons of debt, and it was a really the environment was very tense, and you know, like our family kind of had this veneer of like everything's okay on the outside, like we were never to speak about how we felt or like to ever let anybody know that there were problems. So I always knew to keep everything inside, and not only with everybody else but also with my family. I was always trying to protect them from a very, very young age. I always wanted to protect my parents. I had extreme guilt when it came to my mom and my dad. I felt like it was all my responsibility. I suppose I probably blamed myself in the way that children do. You know, I just remember I had this just deep sense that there was something wrong with me, that I was wrong, if I was doing things wrong, and if I could just change the way I was, everything would be okay. You know, I just didn't ever feel like a part of anything. I always kind of felt like I didn't belong, and I felt alienated. And I guess my solution to that was like, you know, I need to be perfect. If I act perfect, if I look perfect, if I get perfect grades, if I do this, and you know, then I'll be loved. So I guess perfectionism and people pleasing started quite early. And just a real like need to just protect my family at all costs. So inevitably, it just came very easily to me to use external things to fill that void I felt on the inside. You know, it was like food. You know, I have had such a crazy relationship with food my whole life, and have gone through bulimia and anorexia and attention. That was another big thing that I craved from a young age. I always wanted to like make my dad laugh, or you know, like get my mum to notice me. And then once I, you know, got a bit older and I started liking boys, then it was always about getting attention from all the men. And it was a sad existence, because I had no self-worth at all, and I craved all of these things outside of myself. I started smoking really young, and started drinking fairly young. I don't know the exact age I started drinking, but because like drinking in Shetland is really normal, and like people give their kids like a drink and stuff when you're really young, it's not really that strange here. It's a massive drinking culture, and people really look at you as if there's something wrong with you if you don't drink. So I think I was one of those people for a long time. You know, I didn't understand how people couldn't drink. Drinking to me was like, oh my God, like relief. I all of a sudden had confidence, and I felt like I looked better, and all of those things. Like it was just like the best thing ever. I didn't have to think about all of that stuff that was going on in my head all the time until the next day. And then, you know, like finding like party drugs was a big thing for me as well. I really enjoyed all of that. I felt like that was like such a good solution, because, you know, if I took speed, then I didn't want to eat. So it was brilliant. So I would just take it all the time. And I did that all through my teens. And it was, yeah, it was just, I didn't realize that any of that was like addict behavior. It was only now I'm starting to see it. I just thought it was having fun. I thought people that didn't do that were weird, and it wasn't like what was wrong with them. I was never somebody that could just like, you know, like I always wanted the party to continue. So like I would be out for like a 4-day weekend, and I would be so annoyed when like I had to go home, and you know, like everybody else I knew would just like, they would get up hungover or coming down or whatever and just get on with their day. But I would need like downers and different medications to like get through that day. So I was always looking for stuff, and like I'd started like getting medication from my dad at like, I don't know, 14 or something like that. But I mean, he would quite easily give it to me. So, I mean, it didn't start off as me stealing from him, but that is where it ended up. You know, so I don't know, I somehow made it through school and I got into university. I did not find school easy. I remember just feeling very anxious, very afraid. I had panic attacks all the time, but I didn't tell my parents that. My parents don't know that I've had bulimia and anorexia. Like, they don't know any of this stuff. So it's like, it was, all of that was all stuff I kept really secret and to myself. And I lived with all this stuff my whole life just by myself. I found school really hard. You know, I didn't ask for help. I didn't vocalize that I needed help. I just kept it all internalized. I somehow managed to get into university. I just scraped by though, really. And I actually found university a completely different experience. I loved it. And like, the learning style worked better for me. And I was doing, you know, like psychology and stuff I enjoyed. So maybe that was a big difference too. But, you know, I was still like drinking and partying the whole time. Sorry, I need to take a drink of water. I have to take a variety of medication and they all dry your mouth out, which is a lovely side effect. so, yeah, I was I went away to university and I was doing my degree in psychology, and I wouldn't say I was having, like, my life was like happy and like all carefree. You know, I was spending like thousands of pounds every month, like on clothes, makeup, my hair. I had to look perfect. I had to look perfect. Like, that's all I could ever think about. You know, and drinking or food or all of those things. I was spending all my money on it, and I was a very anxious person. I was very unhappy and I was very depressed, and I don't know, I somehow muddled through. I think what got me through is I really wanted to make my parents proud of me. I wanted them to be like so proud that I have this degree and then I could do this career, you know, like perfect career, and then I would have the perfect family, and then my parents would like love me. Even though they did love me, but I don't know, it's just the way that my brain thinks. And my parents actually ended up getting divorced when I was in my third year of university, which was a big blow, and it was a whole big thing that I won't go into because it's a long story, but it was really jarring for me. And a year after that, I got very ill. I got like a virus. What do they call it? Epstein-Barr, glandular fever. I can't remember what it's called. And that eventually got better, but something changed with my health. Like, I got really ill, but in a different way. And I didn't know what was going on. You know, it turned out that I had ME, which is a very difficult to diagnose and very difficult to understand type of illness. And it was a really difficult road. You know, my life imploded. It completely imploded. You know, because like all this things that I needed to do to keep it, make sure everybody liked me and I was perfect enough and I was going to be loved. Well, I couldn't do those things anymore. I all of a sudden could barely walk up the one flight of steps, like stairs, to get to my flat. You know, it was really horrible. And soul destroying. Like, it was such a horrible and scary experience because nobody knew what was going on. Doctors didn't know. They didn't really care because all my blood tests seemed to be fine. That's what they all. I'm really, really good at passing blood tests. Like, they're always perfect. You know, like, it was just like soul destroying to go through. You know, I'd see doctor after doctor and they would just continually tell me, like, you know, just keep doing what you're doing, keep going to work, keep going to university, keep doing everything, keep walking. And I did do all those things and I kept getting worse and worse and worse until I could do less and less of these things. And then what the doctors did then was to prescribe me, you know, like antidepressants and painkillers. And when I got the painkillers, I thought, this is amazing. Like, this is a solution to like my everyday problem. Like, I can take these every single day because they're prescribed for me every single day. You know, like, it just seemed like such a magical solution. to me, which is weird when I think about it, but it really did. And you know, I just slowly, that kind of slowly is, you know, my life slowly, well, actually it was quite quick, but it was slow in the beginning. It just kind of started to snowball out of control. And you know, it just began like 10 years of utter hell. So it turned into like I was using these painkillers habitually every day, every few hours, like every, I say every few hours, but it was probably every hour towards, you know, towards the end. It was really severe and messed up. And and I knew quite early on, like I would say 1-2 years into it, I knew that I was an addict. I remember realizing that that's what was happening, but I did nothing to stop it. And after that few years, then, you know, my family started to cotton on to the fact that I was an addict, and it became really hard to hide, you know, because I'd been kind of hiding it well because I was living in Aberdeen and they were all in Shetland, but I had to move back home to Shetland because of my health and I couldn't work anymore. I had to leave my, I was doing my last year of university, doing my honours year. I had to give up halfway through, you know, like kicking and screaming. It was all, my life was just completely changing. But when I moved back home, it became really hard to hide the fact that I was like just an addict. I was using all day, every day, and I couldn't like monitor it in front of people. Like I just had to do it. But this is like at the same time, my mum's having to get all my prescriptions for me. And then, you know, it's like, then that slowly became that they weren't enough. And I would like harass my dad for medication, like his medication, like literally harass him. You know, I started to steal from him a lot because I couldn't keep up. I couldn't like sustain my addiction with the amount of, you know, medication I was getting prescribed. So I was stealing from him a lot. You know, it was really awful. Like I stole his house key from my sister, and I would go in, and then one of them would come home. I mean, it was just awful. It makes my skin crawl just thinking about it. You know, to end up with, my dad got a surveillance camera installed outside his house because it just gotten so bad and out of control. It was difficult. Like I would even do it when he was in the house. I would like go upstairs, pretend I was going to the toilet, and then I would like go and find like strips of tablets, medication, and I would like, and I knew he would know what I was doing, so like to avoid him ever like being able to get them from me, because that's all the only thing I cared about was that he couldn't take them from me. So I'd like put them down my trousers or in my bra or somewhere that he would never touch. Like he would never do it. So I would do that. It was very painful to sit down. but that's all I cared about, was just like getting what I needed to get in that moment. You know, it was very dark. You know, I had destroyed like all of my family's trust in me. They just, I think, I mean, I must have just been unrecognizable to them. And, you know, I made out that, you know, I was, yes, I'm an addict, but it's only to painkillers. And so if I didn't take painkillers, I wouldn't have this problem, you know, like that then I wouldn't be I'm not like an addict. I'm just taking one thing and they're the problem. And also I have to take them because I'm in pain. So like the only way I can stop taking them is if my health gets better. So that was my little lie to myself and to everyone else around me. And I did believe all that. I did. You know, denial. It was the thing is that I wasn't just taking prescription painkillers. Like I was completely like hooked on opiates. Like I could not survive without them. You know, like I had to have them every single day. But I would take any and every other drug I could get my hands on in the meantime, or as well as, or, you know, it's just bizarre to me that I never realized that was a problem. You know, like if I couldn't get my prescription medication, I would just like drink until I blacked out. You know, I was in a lot of denial. And, you know, towards the end of my of my using. I even started smoking heroin, and I actually preferred my my prescription medication, oddly. It was, you know, it's I suppose it's basically kind of the same chemical compound as heroin anyway, but it was it's probably a lot cleaner than the stuff you get here in Shetland on the streets. What was I going to say there? Yes, I can't remember. Completely lost my place there. I was using constantly. I'd found out how to like buy medications online. I would order, you know, like 200 tablets, like from like five different places for over the weekend. You know, like I would just be buying tons of this medication, and that was great. You know, I thought that was amazing. Until it started to get harder and harder to get it. I got like blacklisted from so many places, like so many pharmacies, and I can't go anywhere in Shetland to get anything, like in a chemist or whatever. But also around the internet also. So I ended up getting them my medication from a really dodgy site, and that is what happened to me. May of last year, I ordered medication online that came from a really, really dodgy company that, you know, that came with no medical instructions or boxes, just came in like a padded envelope with a few strips of the whatever. And I didn't even know what the medication was. I'd never heard of it, but I couldn't get what I wanted. So I read it. It said it was a narcotic. It was highly addictive. And I thought, perfect, I'll take that. I didn't read anything else about it. And this medication turned out to be something that is not legal or prescribed in the UK. And the dosage of one of the tablets was double the amount that a person would be prescribed in one day. So I was taking like one tablet was double what I should have been getting for an entire day. I vaguely remember getting that parcel in the mail, but I don't remember anything after that. And I'd overdosed. And I will say I did not think that I would overdose. Like I thought I was like above that. I think because I'd survived, like I was overdosing every single day and I was surviving. So I just kind of, maybe I was a bit cocky. And also, I really didn't give a shit if I died. Like, it sounds like a horrible thing to say, but I really didn't care. I felt like I had no soul left. Like, I just felt like I was dead inside anyway. So I just didn't care. But I most certainly did not want to go to hospital. So, like, that was the part that I didn't think about or bargain for. So the next thing I remembered was, like, waking up in hospital. No idea how I got there. No idea what was going on. I thought I had COVID, you know, it was like a few months into lockdown, and I thought I must have COVID. And when the nurses told me what had happened, you know, they said to me, you know, you've overdosed. I thought that they were lying. Like, I was like, how could I have overdosed? I only took 30 of those tablets. Like, I thought that that was such a small, minimal amount. Well, apparently it was enough to like kill an elephant is what they said. I don't know. They told me like it is an absolute miracle you survived that, because we have no idea like how that even happened. You should not have survived that, like medically speaking. You know, it was terrible, because my boyfriend Danny and my mum, they found me, and it was really traumatic for them. I started to have seizures, and, you know, it was a really horrible thing. You know, my mum had to watch me being put into a coma, and then watch me being, I had to go to intensive care in Aberdeen. So she wasn't allowed to go with me because of COVID. And so she had to watch me being taken in like the ambulance and driven to the emergency plane so I could be flown in a coma down to Aberdeen and put into the intensive care unit. You know, she thought she was never going to see me again, because that she'd been kind of warned, like, we don't know. We don't think she's going to survive it. And even if she does, we don't know what kind of brain damage she's going to have. That's what they told her. So, you know, they went through an awful lot. They went through an awful lot with me the whole the whole time. But I mean, it was a very traumatic thing for them. The only traumatic part for me was waking up in hospital. The rest I don't remember. So, you know, it was really scary. And it, do you know what it really did? I think now that I've been a part of NA for a while, like I now realise what I had in hospital was a sort of spiritual awakening, because I woke up in hospital and yet I was terrified. And, you know, I remember the nurse saying to me, like, oh, you've detoxed in the coma, which, I mean, I guess that was a good thing because I was never prepared to detox. You know, I kind of resigned myself to just like staying on drugs so that I didn't have to deal with any of that stuff. But even though I detoxed, I still had to go through withdrawals and everything. So, I mean, it wasn't amazing, but it was at least it was something. And I just felt like it. I just felt like in that moment I woke up. I woke up literally, and I woke up figuratively. I woke up to the fact that I was destroying myself. I thought, how have I let my life get so out of control that I don't care about what I'm putting in my body? Like, it suddenly became really clear to me how reckless I had been with myself and the stuff that I was taking, and in a way that I never. Oh, somebody's got their mic on. In a way that I'd never. I can't remember what I was saying. In a way that I'd never looked at things before. Like I really saw things for what they were. I felt so exposed and like vulnerable. Like I knew that like everyone could see what was going on. Not, I mean, they could anyway before, but it was like a real moment of like, holy shit, like what have I been doing? And I felt so bad for what I put my family through, you know, for the last 10 years, and how worried and upset they all were and how scared they were. You know, they all thought I was going to die. And it was a really like humbling experience to go through. You know, it was crazy. I remember just like lying in the hospital bed, and you know, I was in the psych ward, and I wasn't allowed to go to the toilet without closing the door, without keeping the door open even. You know, I had to like do all these things because they thought I'd tried to kill myself. And I remember all there was these other women on the ward, and it's the one thing that always makes me super emotional. But it was these people had no one, like they really didn't have anyone. You know, they were phoning people to try and come and like get them, because you needed to have like somebody to come and take you out. Like you couldn't go out on your own. You had to have, I can't think of the word. And it was really hard to see these, like just this one girl was just screaming, like begging her mum to come and get her. And like, it was so sad. And at the same time, my mum was phoning my phone just like desperate for me to be able to come home. My dad was on his way to Aberdeen so he could come and take me home. And I just felt so grateful in that moment that I have people in my life that love me, because so many people, you know, they don't have that, you know, with their parents or their sister, and like all these relationships I really destroyed. They still loved me, and like, that was one of the most powerful things I ever felt, was the amount of love and gratitude I felt in my heart for my family in that moment. And I thought, like, if I can just do this, like, I just need to try and do this. I need to try and stay clean. I was so miserable at the end. I was so miserable, and I was making myself so ill. You know, I already had my illness to contend with, but now I was actually making myself so much more ill. I didn't know how to stay clean, and I didn't think it was possible. And that's the honest truth. I wanted to do it, but I didn't think it was possible. And I had to stay at my dad's in isolation because I had to go back and be quarantined or isolated for like 2 weeks once I got back and to Shetland again. And, you know, that kept me away from drugs because I was basically like, I had to stay in one room and I wasn't allowed anywhere. And that was a good thing for me and my dad's relationship, actually. You know, like I'd stay there for 2 weeks and he had to speak to me, and like our relationship had become very strained. You know, he's, I know he loves me. It's really difficult to explain. I know he loves me, but he's not capable of giving a lot because he's got a lot of mental health problems, and he cannot be there consistently. Plus, I also like destroyed our relationship by stealing from him constantly and manipulating him constantly. You know, I would tell him, like, if you don't give me what I want, I'm going to commit suicide. You know, like that, things like that. I would say that to him so that he would give me what I wanted. So it was like, I really did destroy our relationship. So it was a really good thing. But it was one of the scariest. That was the scariest 2 weeks of my life. That and the hospital and that, it was terrifying. I felt like this like little bunny rabbit was just like blinking with like big wide eyes. You know, like I couldn't talk about the hospital. I couldn't speak about any of it. I didn't want anyone to tell me anything. I just wanted to like breathe and like get through each minute. Like I was terrified. And that was, I guess, the first time, because I was the first time I didn't have drugs. But each day I started to think like, I'm not going to be able to do this. Like, how am I going to do this? I tried to get some help with the mental health team here in Shetland, and you know, they don't have much to offer service wise and you know, they said to me, you know, the only thing we can offer is, you know, you can get counseling if you're on a methadone script or another like methadone or some other script. You know, they gave me options, and I said, well, you know what, I'm clean, so I just really don't want to do that right now. I don't know how I managed to say that, because honestly, like, that is insane. That's exactly the sort of thing I would have been like looking for normally. So for some reason I didn't, I said no to that, I turned that down. But then I thought, well, what the hell am I gonna do? And I went to the search engine, and I typed in help for addicts in Shetland. First thing that came up, the number one thing, was HIGNA, the Highlands and Islands Group of Narcotics Anonymous. And it never occurred to me that I could, like, NA was something I could go to. I didn't really understand really anything about it. And, you know, I knew more about AA because it's like very big in Shetland, because there's a lot of alcoholism. But there's also a lot of addiction in Shetland. And so they're not NA. So, I mean, it's just like the drinking culture is just more accepted here. But yeah, I really didn't know anything about it. And I wasn't too sure, but I thought, well, what else am I going to do? I was desperate, and it was absolutely the gift of desperation. I was desperate, and the first meeting, it was a Sunday, and I have no idea how I managed to get to that first meeting. Like, I just had to like click on a link. I don't mean like physically get to it, but like, I have no idea how I managed to do that, like mentally, because I remember I was shaking, I was like dripping in sweat, like I was so scared, and I was so afraid to open my mouth and say anything. And I really don't remember that much about that first meeting, except I remember people's voices, so I have a kind of a vague outline of who was there now that I know people more. The one thing I remember is being bowled away, completely floored by the honesty that I was hearing. Like, what I was hearing was it was incredible. Like, all these things that I'd felt inside buried deep, deep, deep down, so that I kind of even forgot that I felt them. You know, like, I was hearing people speak about things that were, that you know, it was the same things that I felt, or the same things that I'd gone through or did. You know, people spoke honestly about their addictions and how, you know, the lows that it brought them to, and that's what I identified with. I was like, holy shit, there are other people like me out there. Like, this is, I actually still am surprised by this all the time. Like, I'm always blown away by like the, you know, the therapeutic value of one addict helping another. It just impresses me on so many levels, like how much that helps. But that was what I remember from my first meeting. And everybody was so kind to me. I remember thinking, like, what is going on? Why are these people being nice to me? Like, this is really weird. you know, like everybody would say these nice things, like, oh, we're so glad you're here and keep coming back. And I was like, keep coming back? Like, what, how, what, can I not just come here once and you can tell me what to do and then I can get on with my life and be happy? You know, and then, but no, that wasn't it. And then, you know, like the total abstinence thing, that freaked me out. Because like one of my first thoughts when I got home from the hospital was obviously like, when should I start drinking again? Because I had stopped drinking for years. I didn't care about alcohol anymore. And that was one of my first thoughts, was like, I wonder when I should start drinking again. Like, that was what I was legitimately one of my like serious questions. So that I was a bit like, ooh. And I also was like, right, they want me to keep coming back because they want my money, you know, because I saw the Tradition 7 thing and I thought like, okay, you guys want my money. but then it wasn't that either. I could not understand it. I thought maybe it was like some sort of like kind of religious cult type thing where it was like, because I've never seen people really that happy except like maybe in church, which I haven't really had that much experience in, but you know what I mean. I was just really surprised by it. I didn't know, I did not know why anybody was being nice to me or why anybody would want me to come back. I mean, at that point in my life, I felt like just the most disgusting human on the planet, just like the dregs of the world. So, I mean, it was incredible. And I think what did keep me coming back was the honesty. But also, what was really important on that first meeting, one thing that was super important was I met my sponsor, my future sponsor at that time, on that meeting. And I swear, like, she came into my life like an angel. And she gave me her number at the meeting, and quite a few people did. I gave her my number too, but she proceeded to call me like the next day. So if I was hesitating about going to another meeting, she called me the next day and just was chatting to me and like kind of giving me a bit of background on what she's like, what, how she's gotten through and like her life in recovery, and just made me feel like I was somebody that was deserving of like being like having a conversation with. I mean, I didn't know how to talk to anyone or like answer any questions. I'm sure the conversation was not very riveting for her, but I remember just feeling like, oh my God, somebody wants to talk to me. And that is one of the things that kept me coming back, like that, the next meeting. I'm so grateful to my sponsor for that. Because I needed that. I needed that kind of push. I needed a little push. I did. I still do a lot of times. You know, I needed that. I think I could have easily just hidden, run away, because that is what I wanted to do. There's just all these things that happened in the time from waking up in hospital to, you know, finding NA, that there must be higher power moments. And it's one of the reasons I was able to believe in something greater than myself because of all these experiences, because I knew that there was something else that was guiding me at that moment, because I was going to meetings, but I was so scared. I didn't want to open my mouth, but I would share somehow. I would share, you know, I was very, like, afterwards, very self-obsessed and worrying about what I said, but I did share. And I started to do the suggested things. I still can't even believe I asked my sponsor to be my sponsor. You know, I was going to, like, be really brave and do it on the phone. But then I got really scared at the last minute. So I texted her afterwards and asked, like, would you be my sponsor? And then another message afterwards, like, don't worry, you don't have to if you don't want to, no pressure. You know, like just all of these, all these things after it, because I was so embarrassed. And she was just like, yeah, of course, like phone me every day for the next 30 days. And, you know, she gave me all the kind of suggested things, like go to a meeting, go to a meeting every day, you know, go to more than one. And, you know, start reading the literature, and, you know, we started doing step work after a little while, and speaking to other people, making connections with other people in the fellowship, which was my most scary thing, because I'm really afraid to call people, ask for help, accept help. I find that all really, really difficult. And as I'm sure most people do, I think I'm the only one still. But that was the hardest thing for me. But, you know, all these things, they did slowly kind of add up together. And, you know, my recovery has all been online. Like, I forgot to mention, like, there isn't, I maybe did mention it. There is no NA in Shetland. Like, we don't have that here currently. Like, yeah, I mean, I get now that I could start setting that up. But the other problem is that I'm housebound. And I'm pretty incapacitated, for lack of a better word. Like, my body is exhausted and weak most of the time, and I have to lie down for most of the day. So online recovery for me is where it's at, because I'm in my bed right now, and I can do this main share. I can speak to all of you guys. I can come to meetings. I can do service. I can do it all from my laptop, which I'm very excited about, but, you know, I could do it off my phone, you know, like my tablet. Like, it's incredible to me that there is this out there. I never knew about it, but I mean, I wasn't looking for it either. So it's like that kind of attraction rather than promotion thing, you know, that it says about in the traditions. I think it's traditional living. I might be wrong, actually. But, you know, it's like, I was like attracted somehow to this program, but I don't even know how it happened. You know, it was all just like all these things that went right. You know, I wasn't supposed to live and here I am. You know, there's all these things that are just like, just seem so incredible to me. I think like being in the coma, like, and that whole near death experience, you know, I think that really opened my eyes up and my perspective, so that I was looking at things differently. That was a really big thing for me, you know, kind of, it opened my heart up to love. I knew when I got out of the coma that I was guided and protected and loved. I can't explain to you why I felt like that. It was weird, because that wasn't the things I was normally used to feeling, but I did feel all of those things. And so, like, it all kind of worked to this moment that I'm, you know, that I found NA, and slowly I realized, like, oh, I can do this. You know, the more meetings I went to, the more I started to realize why I can't drink alcohol, because alcohol is a drug. And even if I don't even if I don't become, you know, addicted to alcohol like I was to prescription medication, it's still going to lead to nothing but bad stuff. Like, I was a terrible drinker anyway. I acted like an absolute idiot when I was drinking. I always drank too much, you know, and I started to realize it was good hearing that message in the meeting every day, you know, in the readings every single day. I started to think, like, I get it, like, I get this. And all of these things, like, they started to click into place. You know, I think, like, I sometimes feel self-conscious, because I want to say, like, I've been in recovery for a year and now I've got this job and I've got, like, three kids, and I, you know, I don't have any kids. I don't know why I said three, but you know what I mean? Like, I want to have like all these, I've been brought up to think external is like what's important. And so there is a part of me that feels self-conscious about my life and what it looks like. Because I'm disabled and I have my health issues and I can't do that much. However, I'm actually almost grateful for those things, you know, the health stuff, because it has gotten me to really start working on my internal and like look inside of myself. You know, the things I've gained in recovery might not be like outward things that I can show people, but like what I've gained is, you know, like choices. I can, you know, I can make a choice today about whether I want to like use or not, or whether I want to like go to a meeting or not. You know, I've got choices. I'm not like dominated by this force of addiction in the way I was, you know, the obsession and compulsion. I'm like, I've got this like burgeoning kind of self-worth and self-acceptance, you know, that's going on. I'm becoming comfortable with myself, with who I am. I'm grateful for all that I have, instead of like looking at all the things I don't have. I did that for years. I was like angry at all the stuff I didn't have and bitter at the world. But now I feel grateful for what I do have. Like, I've got a home. I have people that love me. You know, I've got my beautiful cats, and I've got you guys. You know, I've like got this whole new family and you're all online. My sponsor, I met online, and we speak on the phone, and my friends in NA are all around the world, and I speak to you guys on like messages and on the phone, and it's not the way that maybe most people have done it in the past, but it's the only way I know it, and it's the best thing ever. I've got all these amazing friends, and like you guys feel like my family. I'm really super, super grateful for Higna, and I just want to say a massive thank you. Thank you to Steve for setting Higna up, for knowing that there was that, you know, that people like me and on the islands needed help. Thank you and Debs and Jay and, you know, everyone that helped set it up, because it's such an amazing thing. And I just want to say thank you to all of you, my Higna family, because you all carried the message to me. You all did. And you all had a part in saving my life. And I will leave it there. Thank you so much, everyone. Thank you.
Thank you, Lisa.
Fantastic.
Well done, darling.
Thank you, Lisa. Amazing stuff. I was really relating to. I spent nearly a decade and a half living in a similar kind of culture to the one that you grew up in. So I kind of get it completely. The sort of denial and thin veil of respectability that exists in such places. I just loved your story. It was a real privilege to hear you share today, and it's been a real privilege. Shared earlier in his introduction, you know, to watch you come into these rooms and to grow and become a part of Narcotics Anonymous, and the way that you've embraced this program is an example to all of us. It's wonderful stuff, and I just want to thank you so much for being here, and huge congratulations on getting to a year clean. This is fabulous stuff. So that's enough for me, guys. I'm gonna see if I can get this done. I'm gonna jump into a clean time countdown if I can make it work. But I'll do it anyway. So yeah, we celebrate clean time in our meetings. We clap some virtual hugs. I'm gonna ask if anyone in this meeting today or this week just gone celebrating multiple years of recovery. Or is anybody in the meeting today or this week celebrating 18 months? Or 1 year there this week? Anyone celebrating?
That's me. I'm Lisa, I'm an addict. Oh, this is my last day of celebrating a year.
Yes, Lisa.
Wow. 12 months.
Miracles do happen. Fabulous. So, is anybody in the meeting center this week celebrating 6 months? Or 90 days. Anyone celebrating 60 days? 60 days in recovery today or this week? Or 30 days? Or is anybody in their first 30 days of recovery who would like to give a shout out? Most importantly, is anybody's first meeting, 24 hours clean or less, just back from a relapse, looking for a new way of life? Please keep coming back. And, congratulations to everybody in the room tonight who's got a day clean today, who's in a meeting. That's how it works. There's a couple of ways of getting key tags. You can go to the web page, download an image, or you can send us an email to meetings@higna.org.uk. Send us your name and address, and we'll post you one out. So thank you. Let you know, Lisa, I got them today, so I'll put yours in the post. Okay, guys, there's a fair few in the meeting. I'm just going to open the floor for sharing tonight. We've got half an hour of meeting time left, so anything that Lisa's brought up that you'd like to share about or share back to Lisa, or anything that's affecting your recovery, the floor is free to meet in an hour, guys, so please share with us. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. I'm Christine, I'm an addict.
Hi, Christine.
Hi, Christine.
Hello.
Hi,
Lisa. I echo everything that's already been said. Thank you so much for sharing your story. We've talked a fair bit because I have the same health condition, although I am much better than I have been in many years. But we have that in common. But I just want to say, you know, I have never seen anyone come into the program and get it and get on with it the way that you have. You know, you really are a shining example. And, you know, I'm grateful to Steve and Debs and Jay and, you know, everyone who's set up this meeting and has kept it going. I just realised while you were sharing, I just glanced at the date on my laptop, 22nd of May, and it hit me. If I hadn't relapsed after 13 years, I would have been 30 years clean today. I'm not. I'm 2 years, 8 months or something like that, thank God. But, you know, I knew this date was coming up. And, you know, I'm very, very grateful to Narcotics Anonymous. I'm very grateful in particular to HIGNA and the Australian lot. Because, yeah, I relapsed, but I never left. And I struggled. And I got into a cycle of relapse. But these meetings kept me alive until I have been able to get clean again and believe that I can stay clean so long as I do what I'm supposed to do. And, you know, I know what I need to do. Anyway, that's all I've got to say. Thank you very much. Love you, Lisa. I just always love listening to you. Thank you. Thanks, Steve.
Love you, Christine. Thank you.
Thank you, Christine.
Thank you, Christine.
Thanks, Christine.
Hi, everybody. I'm Ellie in the Addict.
Hello, Ellie.
Hi, Ellie.
Oh, that was a great share, Lisa, as usual. And I'm just really so happy to know you. And you know, we don't have the same illness, but you know, we both can relate. And age has no difference, because I can still, you know, there's just like, it's, I don't know, that's something about this program where there's no age, race, sexual identity, creed, religion, lack of religion, you know. It's just people, you know. And you are a miracle, really. And quite an inspiration. Like the previous person who shared, I also have never met anybody who has grasped the program the way you have. And it's amazing. It's actually amazing. I know I hadn't. I was, you know, as I shared, I'm up and down, up and down. But you seem to be able to navigate this very well. And even when you can't, it's okay, you know, if you're not able to. You have other people who you can always reach out to, you know, who love you unconditionally. And you have been a really great inspiration for service. And I just, you know, really great to know you. And I hope you'll keep coming back, you know, one day at a time. So thanks for letting me share. Love you very much.
Thank you, Ellie.
My name is Selena. I'm an addict.
Hi, Selena.
Welcome.
Hi, guys. Oh, Lisa, thank you so much. That was a riveting share. I so enjoyed listening to you, and so much identification with you. I suppose the first thing that really hit me was, you know, our geographical locations. You've been on the Shetlands, me being in Ireland, and that drinking culture is so acceptable here, but it's, you know, the Narcotics Anonymous, there's still quite a stigma attached to it, you know. However, that doesn't stop me.
I mean, you know, we've talked loads. We have similar health conditions. We've lots of similarities. But one thing that I don't have a similarity with you in is that I didn't get it first time around, you know. I came in and I stayed about a year and then I went back out again and I didn't come back for 12 years. 12 years of going at it again. And, you know, the last few years of that were just utter fucking torture. Excuse my language. But, you know, you deliver such a message of absolute hope and, you know, just... Oh my God, you're just amazing. You know, with difficulties you have, you still keep plugging away at it. And it's such a pleasure to know you and such a pleasure to have listened to you this evening. Thank you so, so much. And thanks everyone for listening. I'll share the time and leave it at that. Thank you.
Thank you, Selena.
Thanks, Selena.
My name's Jim. I'm an addict.
Hi Jim.
Hi Jim.
Thank you, everybody for being here, and just knocked me out, Lisa. A fantastic share. Thank you so much. We have a similarity as well because we. Both kind of housebound, ID there. Sorry, I'm very emotional. One of the favourite bits that you share, I'll just share this, was when you said, holy shit, there are people just like me out there. I just love that. And my gratitude to you is huge, you know, because you've no idea how much you've helped this old rock and roller, you know, to get through what I'm going through. You know, you've helped me enormously. So I'd be forever grateful to you. Thank you so much, Lisa.
Thank you, Jim.
Hello, Spider.
Hi, Spider.
It wasn't that bad, Lisa. She hits me up this morning going, oh, I don't know if I can do this. I just don't know. And I'm like, listen, just come on, you can do it. I'll come over and tell you jokes before you do it. That was a brilliant chair. Now, you are a, can't think of the name. You're like furniture in the room because anytime I show up here, you're usually here at any of these meetings. And it's really a delight to hear your voice. So keep up the good work, and I'm going to share the time. Thanks for letting me share.
Love you, Spider.
Thanks, Spider.
Steve Maddox.
Hi, Stevie.
Hi, Steve.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for your service as normal. Thank you, Lisa. It was lovely. Yeah, just reiterating what other people have said, really. Every time I come into a meeting, you're in it. 9 times out of 10 with a happy, smiley voice, you know. And for someone that suffers from depression, I need that. I need people that are, you know, quite happy and seem to be doing okay. And I've also heard the other side of your illness, you know, being bedridden. I'm listening today from my bed. Because I'm not very well, and yeah, without, you know, this little laptop in front of me, life could be a whole lot different, as we know. You've shown, you, the way you care about people that you can't see, you know. You spoke to me on a few occasions saying, you know, you got this, you'll be all right, it's going to be okay, And I've really took comfort from that, because there's times when you come into a meeting and you're full of yourself and, you know, the world's a shit place and all that. And then when someone encourages you and says, you know, it's going to be okay, I take a lot from that. It really means a lot, you know. So I want to thank you for that, you know, for being that person that does that. And thanks for sharing your experience, Strength and Hope, with us tonight. I was really, you know, I really enjoyed it. I'm glad you're one of our members. Thanks very much.
Oh, thank you, Steve.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you, Steve.
Hi, I'm Catherine. I'm an addict.
Hi, Catherine.
Hi, Catherine.
Hi, Catherine. Hi, Catherine.
Hi, Catherine. Hi, everyone. I hope you can hear me okay, Lisa. I'm on earphones and I'm not sure how efficient they are, but thank you so much for your share and thank you everybody for making the meeting possible. Really love to share, Lisa, and it was a real strong message of, you know, what NA is about, carrying the message and, you know, regardless of any adversities we're going through ourselves, you know, carrying that message that an addict, any addict can stop using drugs. You know, find that new way to live and that message of hope and promise of freedom. And that's just what exactly what I heard all through you share. And I think you're a little ray of sunshine, Lisa. I'm so glad that you found recovery. And when I hear people share, and you know, from I only know you in recovery, and I listen to, you know, the stuff you were saying about your family, and I just think, thank God that you found recovery, you know, because you're a beautiful soul and you deserve that inner peace that it gives. And I loved what you said about, regardless of, you know, the external stuff not being what some people might expect, you know, from a productive and a happy life here in NA, we're taught that, you know, it's those internal gifts that are priceless. And I'm so glad you've got some of that, Lisa. And so if you can hear grunting, I'm minding someone's dog and it's like grunting in the background. And I'm really grateful for this meeting as well. This was my first online meeting, Highlands and Islands, and I remember coming on and I didn't know how to use it. And there's a couple of people that I've heard on the meeting tonight, you were at my first online meeting. So yeah, really beautiful meeting, and I'm so grateful for you, Lisa, and your service to the fellowship, and I wish you all the best in your recovery. Thanks for your share.
Thanks, Catherine.
Thank you, Catherine.
Keep coming back. My name is Vaughn, and I'm an addict.
Hello, Vaughn.
Hi, Vaughn.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for the meeting. Thanks for all the service. And congratulations, Lisa. 1 year. Great achievement. Especially finding recovery in the circumstances we find ourselves. It's, truly, for a person like me, reminds me of the miracle that this fellowship brings. And that's remarkable. I was sitting here and I was listening to everything that you've mentioned and everybody else's words, so I'm not going to bring that up. But there's a particular reading that I love, and I always seem to enjoy reading it. It has a very important meaning for me. We do recover. And as much as we recover, and I see it every week, every meeting I come to Higna, and I hear y'all's voices, and I hear your laughter, it uplifts me, you know. It reminds me of seeing those addicts smile when I didn't know anything about Narcotics Anonymous. But this time I can hear, and that shows me gratitude. that this fellowship can work through you, which ultimately helps me when I go through some challenging times in my recovery. I can be in a meeting and I can just hear you laugh, besides all the beautiful experience, strength, and hope I hear, but to hear you laugh, it means a hell of a lot to me. But you also have to do in recovery. And the service that you do is remarkable. I was always told by old timers, the more you put in, the stronger your foundation is. And the more of a want you would have to keep coming back, no matter what. So thank you for keep logging on for the past 12 months and a bit. And hope you keep on logging on, keep coming back. My name is Vaughn. I'm an addict. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Vaughn. Thank you, Vaughn.
Thank you,
Vaughn.
See you, man.
Thanks, Vaughn.
My name's Tammy. I'm an addict.
Hi, Tammy.
Hi, Tammy.
Everyone, thank you for your share, Lisa. It was powerful from start to finish. It was fantastic. I remember our first phone conversation. I was sitting outside of Tesco's. It was a hot summer's day, and I think the phone conversation lasted about 10 minutes. And look at you now. You know, you've hit the ground running with this, and you're like a sponge, you know, and you just soak up everything, and you embrace it, and you keep it going, and it's an honor and a privilege to have you in my life. You know, when you said, oh, I don't have the kids, I don't have this, I don't have that. You have your fur babies, you have your partner, you know, you have made so much progress with your health. You've made so much progress in your life. You know, you're phenomenal. You're amazing. You know, I never hear you complain. Never. I never hear you get in self-pity. I never hear you moan to me about any of the health conditions you've got. You just get up and get on with it. And you inspire me in so many ways. Ways that I don't think you really know. You know, it's a two-way street, this sponsorship stuff. And you know, my higher power brought you into my life for a reason, and I can't thank my higher power enough for you. Thank you for your beautiful share. Thank you for everyone that does service, and I'll leave it at that. Thanks.
Thank you, Tammy.
Hi, I'm Sarah, and I'm an addict.
Hi, Sarah.
Yeah, I just wanted to connect because I actually need to leave in a minute. But Lisa, that was such a beautiful, beautiful share. I think it's like the second time I've heard you share. And do you know what? You're just such a beautiful, beautiful, happy, friendly soul. Like everybody has said it, you're just always so happy. And you can really feel like the love and the gratitude you have for your family, the love and the gratitude you have for NA and for your friends. And you can actually feel that gratitude and that love, and it's just so beautiful. You really are an inspiration for everything that you went through. And then, you know, to be in the coma and wake up and have that spiritual awakening, like your story is just absolutely beautiful. And I'm really, really blessed to have met you on this journey. Like, I remember coming to the 6 o'clock women's meeting and you reached out to me straight away, and you're just so beautiful. And I'm really blessed to have been here to hear your story, and I'll leave it there because I actually need to leave now. But God bless you, and I love you lots and lots and lots. Keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you, Sarah.
Thanks, Sarah.
still have a bit of time left, guys, if anyone else would like to jump in.
Hi, my name's Penelope and I'm an addict.
Hello, Penelope.
Hi, Penelope.
Hi, family. Hi. well, congratulations, Lisa. You've done a wonderful year. I mean, it's just incredible. I remember speaking to you when after your first meeting. I think I was there. And your whole kind of wake up, you know, you were awake then, you know, but you were trying to find out about NA and what shape was it, you know, what do we do, you know, all that stuff you said, you know, and I it's really great to be part of the family that you're recovering in, and you know, I see great stuff ahead for you, and I'm sure that if you keep coming back, all the things that got sick round your using are going to get well round your recovery, because you put it at the centre of your life, which is, you know, where we get the strength from a power greater than us. I've been feeling really emotional about things on this. Last night I was reading the traditions and something caught in my throat, my eyes filled up, and I don't know why, but you know, I relate as well what you say, you know, I was really ill when I found Higna, and the comfort I get from hearing voices that are always here, you know. And the readings, and it just blew me away, because that's exactly what I needed. I couldn't walk and I couldn't go to meetings. And then we went into a lockdown a few months later, but this, you know, I mean, suddenly everybody was on Zoom and I was kind of like, oh, I've been doing online meetings for ages. and I don't think, you know, I don't think I'd be alive still, because I was really suffering without the meetings, you know, coming out of hospital, it was just, you know, so I think being part of this, you know, it will grow and you will, I'm sure, be part of that. So I'd like to say congratulations. 1 year is amazing. Keep coming back and doing what you're doing. Yeah, send you lots of love and a big hug.
Thank you, Penelope.
Still a few moments left, guys, to share it. If anyone would like to just jump in, identify, say hello. I'm going to take that as a sign that we're done. I'm going to circle the wagons. So we have come to the end of sharing time, but not quite the end of the meeting. And he rightly said, would someone please like to read us the traditions?
My name's Tammy. I'm an addict. I'll read them.
Thank you, Tammy.
Hi, Tammy.
The 12 traditions of NA. We keep what we have only with vigilance. Just as freedom for the individual comes from the 12 steps, so freedom from the group springs from our traditions. As long as the ties that bind us together are stronger than those that would tear us apart, all will be well. 1. Our common welfare shall come first. Personal recovery depends on NA unity. 2. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority. a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants, they do not govern. 3, the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop using. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or NA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry the message to the addict who still suffers. 6, an NA group would never endorse, finance or lend the NA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, least problems of money, property or prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every NA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Narcotics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centres may employ special workers. 9, NA as such ought never be organised, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Narcotics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the NA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio and films. 12, anonymity is a spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Understanding these traditions comes slowly over a period of time. We pick up information as we talk to members and visit various groups. It usually isn't until we get involved with service that someone points out that personal recovery depends on NA unity, and that unity depends on how well we follow our traditions. The 12 traditions of NA are not negotiable. They are the guidelines that keep our fellowship alive and free. By following these guidelines in our dealings with others and society at large, we avoid many problems. That is not to say our traditions eliminate all problems. We still have to face difficulties as they arise, communication problems, differences of opinion, internal controversies, and troubles with individuals and groups outside the fellowship. However, when we apply these principles, we avoid some of the pitfalls. Many of our problems are like those that our predecessors had to face. Their hard-won experience gave birth to the traditions, and our own experience has shown that these principles are just as valid today as they were when these traditions were formulated. Our traditions protect us from the internal and external forces that could destroy us. They are truly the ties that bind us together. It is only through understanding and application that they work.
Thank you, Tammy.
And we have tradition 7, passing the virtual pot. So in keeping with tradition 7, every NA group would be fairly self-supporting, declining outside contributions. If you'd like to make a contribution from the UK, there's a couple of ways you can do that. You can either go to the bank, CSB Highlands and Islands Group of NA, sort out an account number are listed. Alternatively, or if you're outside the UK, you can make a contribution if you'd like to make a contribution. You can go to the bottom, to the tradition 7 buttons at the bottom of the guidelines or about pages of the website, and the guidelines page is linked there. And all contributions made to those accounts are not used to support the group, but used to help carry the message to the still suffering addict. And there's couple of alternative links there you can use. It will take you straight to the PayPal portal to make your contribution in that way if you so choose. So thank you, guys. And I don't know if anybody's got any business for the good of the group or NA as a whole at the moment that they'd like to bring. As I know, perhaps Vaughan, please, would you help us and read We Do Recover?
Hi everybody, my name is Vaughan, I'm an addict.
Hello,
we do
Vaughan.
Recover.
Hi Vaughan.
Hey everyone. Hello everybody. We do recover. But at the end of the road, we find that we can no longer function as a human being, either with or without drugs. We all face the same dilemma. What is there left to do? There seems to be this alternative, either go on as best we can to better ends, jails, institutions or death, or find a new way to live. In years gone by, very few addicts ever had this last choice. Those who are addicted today are more fortunate. For the first time in man's entire history, a simple way has been proving itself in the lives of many addicts. It is available to us all. This is a simple spiritual, not religious program known as Narcotics Anonymous.
Thank you, Vaughan.
Everybody.
We do have an anonymity statement in our meeting, which is tradition 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Tradition 12 tells us that anonymity is one of the core principles of our program, but asks that when attending our meetings, we will do our best to remember that gossip can be very damaging to our fellowship and individual members. You see here what you hear. When you leave here, please let it stay here, but please do carry the life-saving message that you've heard away with you for yourselves and the next addict you find that might need it. Other online meetings are available around the world. You can see our group website, hitler.org.uk, takes you to all our meetings and various other bits and pieces. You can also go to virtual-na.org. Both of those sites will always tell you what time meetings are wherever you are in the world. Virtual NA is currently listing over 2,800 meetings a week, multiple languages on multiple platforms, so please check those things out. And if you'd like to go to other online meetings in the UK, you can go to ukna.org/online, currently 900 or so a week. Other meetings, links and details to many more, so thank you for that. So it just remains for me, Lisa, thank you so much again for coming along and sharing your experience with us tonight. And congratulations on 1 year. And it's a real privilege to watch someone come into the rooms and get clean and stick and stay and improve the quality of my life just by being there. And it's wonderful to see. And it's one of the things that keeps me coming back. And it's one of the things that keeps me wanting to do service, to see that, to be part of that and be part of that privilege. It's amazing. Thank you everyone for being a service. Thank you Jay for moderating. Thank you everybody else who does service to the Highlands and Lights groups of NA. To make these meetings possible. So thank you. And Lisa, would you like to lead us out?
Oh yes, I can do. All right, guys, can we just take a moment of silence to remember why we're here and the still suffering addict, both inside and outside of the rooms. We'll follow that with the wee version of the Serenity Prayer. Thank you so much, guys. Okay, so to the God of your own understanding,
God,
God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God, God,